Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Michael Morris. Well, let's get into our news stories of today. And the first thing we're going to be talking about is tonight's State of the Nation address, which, depending on when you're listening to this, may have already happened or may be happening as we speak. The president will give a State of the Nation address, and these are a highlight for a number of reasons. One is that the main reason is that a lot of government departments do actually draw up their sort of strategies based on this kind of thing, on the speech rather. But also, there's always the potential for some sort of political hijinks, stunts, and drama. Although I doubt there'll be too much of that this time. Maybe the MK party will do something. Maybe the EFF and MK will do something together. They seem a bit out of juice at the moment, so I don't know. Maybe they won't pull it off. But anyway, various political parties have weighed in on what they think should be in the State of the Nation address. The ANC, of course, are the main writers of such a thing, said that ANC NEC member and MP Khulusela Diko said that the party expects, quote, decisive action from the president, anchored in concrete economic reform agenda. Now, this makes me think a little bit of when you see a house on fire and you say, we need to put something on the fire. Yes, that's true, but it matters a lot if you're putting water on the fire, water on the fire. And when you see what the ANC was more specifically suggesting, this sounds a lot more like petrol than water. Diko, speaking to Business Day, said that more needed to be done on the economy, and that this industrial policy must be central and must be structured around decarbonization, greater use of and beneficiation of critical minerals, and diversification of trade. She also said that a further priority was digital reform, and that government had not moved fast enough on digitization, and that the digital public infrastructure must be embedded within a growth strategy. Quote, we should be thinking about digital sovereignty, building domestic technological capability, developing South African large language models, and defining a clear national position on global technology platforms. Okay, so we'll get to what the DA said about what should be in the speech just now. But Michael, when I read this, I almost lost my mind for a number of reasons. One, in terms of bold economic reforms, industrial policy, decarbonization, greater beneficiation of minerals, and diversification of trade have been core ANC policy for like what, 20 years now? This is not a reform. This is, we're going to keep doing what we're doing. I guess diversification of trade is a sort of a slightly newer one, but it's kind of, you can't just declare that trade will be diversified. You actually have to sort of take some steps. And lowering tariffs is one thing, but you actually have to make the business environment friendly. But then it's the bit about the digital sovereignty that made me absolutely my head spin around like it was, like I was possessed or something. Okay. This is clearly just a talking point that has been picked up either from stuff going on in the EU now or things that are being said by Russia and China. And the reason is because of geopolitical tensions with the US and thinking that, oh, maybe we want to be in a state where we don't have to rely on American technology. And so all those countries which are potential American competitors are thinking about digital sovereignty, right? The Europeans have recently talked about, like, we need our own version of Visa and MasterCard, and the Chinese are very keen on AI development, and the Russians have had lots of problems with, for example, getting off of Starlink that they rely on, for example, in the military. There's arguments to be had about whether that's actually a good idea or not, but that's all within their contexts, at least sort of understandable. Okay, we can barely keep the lights on. Yes, we haven't had load shedding for a while, but it's not like we have a surplus of water. We don't even of electricity. We don't even have water sovereignty right now, right? In our largest city. The idea that we can be focusing on building large language models that presumably this will be a government-run program is just so insane. What are we supposed to build our own internet, our own financial transaction system? We should be trying to fix the basics and for the more advanced stuff we need, we have to rely on foreign technology. If we were in a stronger economic position, maybe we could talk about some sort of digital sovereignty. But we can't. This is just madness. It's a complete waste of time, and it just shows how unbelievably out of touch the ANC is. Michael?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We're looking at an astonishingly lame proposition from Kusela Dika. At a time when it's very clear that she's avoiding all the critical issues. You know, it's growing the economy beyond where it is now. We've got to ramp up that growth quickly if we're going to begin to deal with rising unemployment, declining investment, and so on. It's all the kinds of things that are the kind of wishy-washy. The kind of pretense to, as you hinted at, kind of pretense to modernity, to being with wherever the rest of the world is, the kind of with it economics of contemporary stuff.
There was an article today about the SONA following up on, I think it was 2019 SONA speech, which promised a smart city around Lanesia.
Exactly.
One of the great examples of this kind of idiocy.
Exactly. So it's kind of pie in the sky stuff, easy to, you know, prattle away about whatever that was, digital sovereignty. You know, actually, it's quite likely that, you know, one of the most successful things, and it's going to come back and bite the ANC, is the communication system in this country, which, you know, cell phones have transformed the lives of South Africans and given them immediate communication. They know what's going on. They can see what's going on. They know, you know, there's no way you can dupe anybody in this country because we know stuff and we know it quickly. And that's very largely, of course, the result of private sector enterprise and innovation and so on, and getting cell phones out there and just ordinary people just making the choices for themselves. I don't want a landline phone. I've got to, you know, it's a ridiculous thing. I've got to get a credit rating for it, and there are all kinds of complications. I don't have that. You know, that's just disappeared completely. Post office and post whatever it was.
That was an innovation we picked up before many first world countries did. I remember that when cell phones were already a ubiquitous feature of South African life, you would still see, for example, American films where like a cell phone was kind of a slightly niche product.
Exactly. And I'm just so aware of it in all sorts of different ways. You know, people are just completely familiar with the idea of instant money. I forget what it's called, has a particular name, but anyway, just, you know, sending it on the phone. You just send details over WhatsApp. WhatsApp is free. It's safer. You're not carrying cash around. It's just instant. You know, you've got a record of it. It's really transformative. So that is actually the ironic counterpoint to exactly what she's talking about. But what the government can and should be doing is letting people build cell phone companies here, making it easier for them, making it easier for, you know, new forms of big investment in whatever the software is or the hardware or the stuff in the ground. It's getting, she talks about beneficiation of critical minerals. Well, the first thing we've got to do is make sure that we've got mining companies who are willing to come here and spend the hundreds of millions of rands it takes just to get started. There's a mining
endowment. Get stuff out of the ground.
Yeah, just get it out of the ground first. Forget about it. Beneficiating thing, you know, just leave that to the private sector. They'll do that far better than any government policy will be able to determine or dictate. That's really exactly what's wrong here, you know. Yeah.
I think one of the reasons that we, you know, you saw something like South Africa's quick adoption of cell phones and actually how I think fiber, for example, rolled out to middle-class areas quite quickly was because precisely government was quite slow to sort of recognize, you know, that this was actually a new thing that was important. And so it didn't overregulate it to death. And so South Africans being an industrious people, we just kind of built these infrastructures. And now sort of government has years after the fact sort of caught up to them and a sort of, oh, yes, now, what a great success that was. It's the same thing with these large language models. We must develop our own. No, just let South Africans breathe, let them build some wealth, and they'll figure out that stuff for themselves. We shouldn't be trying to be some sort of autarkic, self-sufficient nation that's like got a siege economy because we're going into some great geopolitical conflict with the rest of, no, that's just, I think it shows that the 1980s has never left the ANC. This is just a recurring feature of their thought.
I really do think that you're absolutely on the money. It's that nostalgic, old-fashioned sort of lumbering party that belongs back then, still looking back to the, however important those documents were, the Cliptown Conference and the Freedom Charter and all that sort of thing. That's fine, as we recognize that history and there were important things were achieved, popular investment in ideas and so on. We let all that go in 1994. We achieved the kind of apotheosis, in a sense, of that part of our history in 1994. But now we ought to be moving forward instead of backward. And looking forward,
and 1996 when we adopted our constitution.
Exactly. Yeah. So
in sort of much more realistic contrasting comments were from the leader John Steenhuisen, who said that while the DA had given some input on the SONA previously. He said that the specific SONA meeting was all the GNU leaders were briefed in general terms, though, quote, without much specifics. So despite all of the talk of how the GNU's sort of working relationship has improved, it doesn't seem like it's that much better. But anyway, he said the big thing is jobs and growth. And while the economy has stabilized and unemployment has, quote, gone down slightly, that it's, quote, not nearly enough. He said that there needed to be accelerated reform in ports, rail, and roads, that we march determinately towards public-private partnerships in our ports and harbors, that government must move out of all things that are holding us back from growth. He said that if reforms were enacted and fiscal discipline sustained, 3% growth target by the end of this term in 2029 was achievable. Which, yes, would be nice, but that's still quite a low target. On employment policy, he said there should be a review of BEE, that this policy should be judged on its objectives, not on its objectives, but on its actual outcomes, and that the frameworks have failed to produce broad-based empowerment that have instead benefited a narrow elite. The Freedom Front Plus's leader, Dr. Cornel Mulder, said that the economy is the biggest issue, that there should be serious growth, and that South Africa should be more aggressive in repairing its trade relations with the US, which he said would help to encourage foreign direct investment. So, those seem like much more realistic propositions. I think, simply getting some kind of good trade agreement with the US is actually not really enough, because there's no point in saying, oh, well, there's no tariffs if at the same time you have to give over significant chunks of your company. In a BEE deal, we'll have to pay super heavy taxes or, overregulated to death, whatever. But they seem much more focused on, I think, the issues that most South Africans care about. And we see this over and over again in our polls, right, that jobs are the number one issue for South Africans. Economic growth is the only route to jobs. And it's just kind of interesting, the contrast of how the focus from the DA and the Freedom Front even is much more on actual bread and butter issues, while it's all sort of kind of corporate with it buzz speak for the from the ANC.
Exactly. And just contrasting John Steenhuisen and Chriselle Diko, you have a sense that Diko is almost deliberately trying to avoid talking about the things that really matter. And Steenhuisen is saying, well, the things that really matter are jobs and growth, and we've got to get our basic facilities working, ports and railways, and we can do that by having more private public partnerships, and in terms of infrastructure, we can set targets, set dates, say this is what we're going to achieve by then. It's accountability, it's offering something quite specific, not just pie in the sky. And it's just a completely different approach. And that, as you say, is what South Africans repeatedly have indicated. Well, in terms of our polling, we get a sense of this. respondents have increasingly indicated that what South Africa really wants, it's no surprise, is, jobs, better financial security, economic security, household well-being. These are the things that matter. And the irony is that that is the route, if the ANC has any hope of turning itself around and clawing back to any kind of respectability, that is the only route to doing so. There is nothing else. And all these quite pathetic, you might almost feel sorry for people like Deko having to come out and say these things, because, you know, it's so obvious. Some of the other stories we get to discuss, we get kind of bring this out. It's so obvious what the matter is, and the decisive action that's required. It's not just nice to haves and, you know, airy fairy sort of modern ideas. It's none of that. It's really, as you said a bit earlier, it's the basics we need to get to.
So, you know, from a political strategist perspective, just one last thing on this. It's kind of, it has been one of the more surprising things that the ANC, which has been such a dominant political force and was successful in establishing itself as the country's most dominant political force, has in the past few years just, I think, so failed to grasp politics, like how to do politics. The purpose of something like SONA and the reason you give these comments to the media is not like some sort of vague reassuring of business or some, you know, kind of attempt to make yourself look a bit sort of with it. It's to win votes, right? That's why Steenhuisen is talking to the media. That's why Deko is giving these comments. And yet there's nothing in these comments from Deko suggesting that the ANC is actually trying to talk to their own voters who are currently wavering. It is just kind of extraordinary as political malpractice. As you say, this is the only path, embracing these reforms, working closer with the DA is actually the only way the party can survive as a political force in South Africa. And, every bit of polling we've seen seems to suggest that's not turning around, that's accelerating.
Yeah, I think so. You know, if we were sailing along at a sort of steady 6% growth a year, then, you know, it would be kind of forgivable for the ruling party to think, let's not rock the boat, let's just keep things steady. You know, we're doing okay, guys, and, you know, but we're not there, and the public knows that we're not there, and so that makes it all the more extraordinary. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of which, the ANC not knowing how to do politics, we talked yesterday, John and I, John Enders and I, about the water crisis in Joburg and how this is almost certainly rebounding to the DA's benefit as the local government elections approach. But just how weak the response of the ANC has been to this water crisis, particularly Gauteng Premier Panyaza Lesufi, let me just play the clip. Let's just see if this works. When talking about the water crisis, he tried to make the point that, you know, he was affected by it too.
Also go through, in some instances, I had to go to a certain hotel so that I have to go to my commitments. We also go through the same inconveniences like any other person.
So that was Panyaza Lesufi saying that there's no special water supply for government officials, that he goes through the same things. And, you know, even he had to check into a certain hotel to ensure that he had water to be able to do things. Now, I'm sure the Premier does know this, but most people can't afford to just check into a hotel when they need a bath. And it's just kind of this very quickly became apparent as everyone dogpiled him on social media. The DA was making hay out of it. It was turning into a complete debacle. And I see that Panyaza Lesufi today actually issued late yesterday actually issued an apology. My sincerest apology, no harm intended. Premier Lesufi clarifies remarks on water challenges in Gauteng. Gauteng Premier Panyaza Lesufi wishes to sincerely apologize for any misunderstanding or offense caused by a statement he made while clarifying comments during a media briefing earlier today addressing water challenges in the province. The Premier acknowledges that his statement, in which he made reference to a hotel, may have been interpreted in a manner that suggested the impact of water challenges differ based on one's position in society. This was never his intention. Michael, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, quite clearly, no clarification is going to get you out of that mess. I think, you know, it's a kind of politics which the ANC is completely unaccustomed to. This idea of, you know, you feel yourself to be on the same level as the voters. You can level with them. You can be honest with them. You can quite comfortably place your private life in the public sphere as a kind of illustrative example of how we all sort of mucking along together and so on. But it only works. It only works in an atmosphere or environment of integrity, where they, you know, people do actually trust. They're listening to you. They're paying you the respect of, you know, taking you seriously. That is gone. It's gone for people like Panyaza Lusifi, and I don't think any other ANC leader. There is no clarification possible. He said what he said, and we all understood. Every single South African understood exactly what he meant, and wondered about this thing about, you know, we've had no water for 10 days. Oh, well, we just check into a hotel and have a bath. You know, it's just not possible, except for this tiny minority. And most of them, or a lot of them, are people who are paid by the public to do a job, and they're not doing it properly. They're failing. So it's not he's suggesting that this is an advertisement of egalitarianism and, you know, shared burden and so on. No, it's not. He's simply advertising how he's abusing us by using his public salary to pay for a privilege because he's not doing his job properly. That's really what it comes down to.
I just think about what the reaction to this would have been if a DA politician, maybe Helen Zille, somebody said, you know, this is so awful. I have to go to gym to shower. You know, even I'm greatly affected by this. And I think the ANC would have said, you see, so out of touch with the poor who can't afford a gym membership. He didn't even say gym membership. He said hotel. He said a certain hotel, which kind of
gives the impression he meant
nice one.
You one certainly had a sense you didn't really want to go into the details of that, just in case that didn't have a good look. And the trouble is it actually undermines so much more than simply the ANC. It undermines also this notion that basic services cannot be provided by the state. You know, the state is incapable, the government is incapable. I keep speaking about this all the time because I really think it matters. We need serious-minded politicians who don't say stupid things and who really are committed to doing their jobs. We know lots of them. They are. We do have them around. We've seen increasingly in the GNU with the new faces coming in. I'm not mentioning parties. And here in the Cape, I mean, you and I both live here. Things are very different from elsewhere in the country, largely because there are a lot of serious-minded politicians who are doing their jobs and they're accountable and all the rest of it. And it creates an environment in which business succeeds, which people can make better choices and so on. And that's really what we want. One of the things that was interesting about, just to go back a little bit to the previous story, to John Steenhuisen's comments about the GNUs, he thought that his comment that he thought that the DA winning Joburg would be good for the GNU. I thought that was quite an interesting comment, in kind of demonstrating a success story that, you know, that it is possible to make what governments or at whatever level are doing successful. You if you make a success of it, it's actually empowering to people because it gives them a voice. They can demand things. They feel they're engaged in a relationship and so on. I mean, it's a very complex thing, but that's why I think, you know, when I look at people like Panyaza Lusifi and saying stupid things like this, it's so annoying because I think it's undermining that essential proposition. It's not to say that the private sector is incapable of doing it or shouldn't be have a bigger part in it or so on. But I certainly, you know, it worries me enormously that people begin to think, oh, well, let's just hand it over to private business because they know how to do it. I don't think that's an automatic solution to all the issues in a modern state. And yeah, it worries me a great deal that people like Panyaza Lusifi are kind of damaging that essential proposition. People have voting rights, an opportunity to choose how they're governed, and it's just abused and kind of thrown away by these fat cat politicians.
There's a larger political point on this one as well, which is that, you know, Panyaza Lusifi has been the champion of sort of the anti-GNU, we must work with the EFF and ANC. And of course, the city of Joburg is in many ways the ultimate testament to that potential alliance structure, right? Because the coalition that runs Johannesburg is the ANC, the EFF, and a coalition of smaller parties. And I presume that, you know, there will be a push by some in the ANC after the next local government election to include MK in that arrangement as well. And this is, you know, this is the vision of what the ANC has to offer voters of this country, that, you know, is not the GNU. The ANC says, no, you know, if you're not happy with the GNU, don't worry. We've got this other thing, and that's the GNU with the EFF and MK. And look at how well it's working in Gauteng. Our champion, Panyaza Lusifi, is forwarding it. It's not an attractive look. And I think this is a really big problem for that sort of radical left side of the ANC, is they really don't have... I think a strong case for themselves. A lot of the ideological points they pushed forward for a long time, you know, they've been saying them forever, so they're much more boring than they used to be, you know, nationalize this, take land, this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they have such huge governance failures amongst their champions. It's not a great position to be in. And ironically, one of the things is, as you say, about when Steenhuisen says that this would be good for the GNU, we do see, I can't remember which poll it even was. It was one of the more recent ones. You see that this is kind of a consistent thing. Most ANC supporters even actually want to be in a coalition with the DA. And there's this sort of feeling amongst a whole chunk of kind of soft ANC voters who are like, maybe they support the party for now, but they're kind of on the fence a bit. They're not super happy with it. They want it to be in coalition with the DA, kind of because there's this feeling of, we don't know if we trust the DA, but we want the ANC to still be in government to sort of, you know, represent, I don't know, touchy-feely liberation, you know, standing up for the poor, whatever. But we also don't think they can run the country. So there's this sort of segment of the voting population who wants the ANC and DA to be in coalition together. You know, Panyaza Lusifi probably could have made something like that work in Gauteng if he wanted to, right? If he'd actually tried to sort of genuinely include the DA as partners in the provincial government of unity. But, you know, he cut them out. He broke, he sort of got them to vote him into office and then made sure that they weren't actually in government. I think the political ramifications of Lusufi's mishandling of this echo beyond even the local government elections. I think this is a really big problem for the ANC.
Yes, I definitely agree with you. Yeah.
Okay, there was a last story, but I don't think we really have time to get into it. I think let's leave that for tomorrow. In which case, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We hope you found the show interesting. We shall be back tomorrow at, well, it's Thursday already. Is it? Yes. We'll be back tomorrow on Friday for the live show at 1:30. So join us on YouTube if you want to catch us live. Otherwise, we shall see you to talk, presumably, if anything interesting happens and so on. We'll chat about it tomorrow. Otherwise, I'm sure we'll find many interesting things to talk about. Thanks very much, everyone. Have a great day.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.